As I look out there at all of you this morning, I think I can safely assume that I'm looking at a bunch of law-abiding citizens, right? I think. We already did our prayer of confession, so no confessing now. But, you know, it's a good thing that you don't live in the state of Pennsylvania, because there, some of you criminals would be doing something very illegal, which is hiding dirt under a rug. And it's a good thing you don't live in Georgia, because if you did, and you went out for ice cream after church, it would be illegal to put that ice cream in your back pocket. I heard about that one on the Ellen DeGeneres show just this week. And right here near us in Rockville, Maryland, be careful, because it is illegal there to swear while on the highway. Now, I know we all have broken that law. If you ever go on vacation, make sure you don't get arrested, because in Alaska, it is illegal to give beer to a moose. So be careful, don't do that. And if you go to New Jersey and get in trouble with the law, you might double your sentence, because it is illegal to frown at police officers in New Jersey. These are all real examples of laws that are obviously not taken seriously, but they're still on the books. They're still written down somewhere. And so, of course, they probably shouldn't still be enforced, and we don't still enforce them. That would seem crazy. But we as human beings, to be fair, we've always had a lot of trouble knowing what's important and what we should change our minds about. That's what we'll be thinking about today from this passage in Acts. The book of Acts, like I said, is all about the early church, and they had a lot of conflict and persecution from the outside world. But they also had to deal with a lot of internal disagreements between them. They were not so different from the church today, not just Christ our anchor, but all churches today. Internal disagreements were a real threat. And the passage today was about a major controversy that happened back then inside the church. The rumor mill was working overtime, and word had gotten around the churches in the area that Peter, who was a pillar and leader of the church, had eaten with a bunch of Gentiles and even baptized them. Now, we nowadays might shrug our shoulders. We don't really use that word. We might think it doesn't seem like such a big deal for him to eat with Gentiles, but back then it was. When we read about Gentiles in the Bible, it basically means anybody who was not already a Jewish person. They were different not only in their religious practices, but they were considered to be entirely different people groups, different races and cultures than the Jewish people. They didn't understand each other, and they may even have been a bit afraid of each other. So for Peter to eat with them would have been considered unclean and taboo, very strange. And to include them in the church by baptism would have felt wrong to many of the Jewish converts. Back then, it was expected that all of us, anybody who became a Christian, would still follow Jewish laws. They hadn't worked all these kinks out yet. So they thought these new Christians would still practice circumcision, they would still keep kosher, and they would keep all the other laws too. And when I say all the other laws, I'm not talking about the Ten Commandments. They had a lot more than that to follow. Jewish law back then was very, very detailed. In fact, there were over 613 laws that they followed, that they memorized and followed. 613! And they dealt with every single aspect of life. So giving birth, sex, health, money, hygiene, death, everything else in between. It dealt with all of it. Critics were thinking, if we disregard all these laws all of a sudden, what do we have left? It was very, very threatening. I wonder if any of this sounds familiar, because we don't have 613 laws, but churches today still sort of feel this way. If we change our mind on this thing, what do we have left? Yet we know now the church has actually changed a whole lot since then. We obviously don't try to keep 613 laws anymore. We are ruled by a new law, the law of grace. Jesus coming to us means that God realized it's more important for us to have a relationship with him than it is for us to follow a long list of rules. In fact, Jesus deliberately superseded the Old Testament call in the book of Leviticus to be holy as I am holy. That's what God used to say, be holy as I am holy. And instead, Jesus said, be merciful as I am merciful. So in Jesus, it probably seemed to the world like God himself was changing his mind as to what was really important for us as people of faith, was changing the rules and changing what was important. And if that is the case, then how much more should we be willing to be moved by the Spirit rather than set in our ways, whatever those ways might be? We all have these things in church and faith that we hold sacred and for which we really cannot stomach changes without rolling our eyes or giving a groan. All of us. Maybe it's music. Maybe it's style of prayer. Maybe it was once women in the pulpit. I don't think you guys have a problem with that, but maybe at one point you did. Maybe it's who should be allowed to get married or be baptized. Maybe it's what somebody has to do to be considered a church member. My late grandfather was one of the few people I've ever met who was Catholic and actually preferred when the Catholic Mass was all in Latin. He left the church when the service started to be done in English because he said it was distracting him from his time of prayer. So we all have our things. We all have things like that that we love about the church, and if they change, it shakes us up just a little too much. I really believe that an important discipline for us as followers of Jesus is keeping our minds open. We have to allow our biases and stereotypes to be continuously re-examined in the light of what God is doing in the world. God did ask the Jewish people at one point to keep those 613 laws. That was God's idea, to eat certain food and do everything in a special way. And God asked them to do that so that the world would know they belonged to him, that they were part of God's family. But then here in Acts, we see a God who decides instead it's more important that the world know that all people are invited to be a part of God's family. On one of my first days of work here at COA, I attended the Baltimore Presbytery meeting with a couple of our members here, Susan and Alice. And that is a gathering of a whole bunch of ministers and elders in the Presbyterian Church, and there's a different topic every single time we meet. And the topic that time was unconscious bias. It was challenging for each of us to consider who are the people in our lives that maybe we consider unclean, or that's kind of an archaic word. Who are the people we consider too far out there for us to connect with or to understand? Who are the Gentiles for us? The speaker at that presbytery meeting reminded us that the human brain is a powerful thing, but it can only process so much stuff at once. In every single moment, we are being bombarded with thousands and thousands of pieces of information, and we cannot process all of it, so our brain sometimes takes shortcuts that maybe we don't question. It's unconscious. And that especially happens, our brain takes those shortcuts if we're out of our element, uncomfortable or afraid, in situations that we're not used to. Our brain might jump to conclusions about who we can trust, who means us harm, or who's worth knowing. The speaker at Presbytery claimed that the only way to decrease that distance between us and them is to really reflect on these shortcuts, these biases, these divisions that we create between ourselves and other people. I'm reminded often in my own marriage to a black man as a white woman that only a couple generations ago, my marriage would have been considered not only unseemly, but also illegal. It would have been on the books as illegal, and me being in this pulpit as a woman would also have been considered an abomination. So I am a direct recipient of people changing their minds. So much has changed, but still, even today, we all do it, myself included. We all keep up divisions, and we keep some people at a distance, even though 99% of the time we don't mean to because we have good hearts, but we all do it. So I would ask you again, who are the people in this world that make you just reflexively shake your head, that make you uncomfortable and want to keep at a distance? It could be people who don't speak your language, It could be people with a lifestyle that seems threatening, that seems odd. It could be people who stretch the ideas of gender and sexuality. There's a lot of that that goes on nowadays. It could be somebody of the opposite political persuasion, especially the really loud ones. Who is your Gentile? Because we all once were Gentiles, every single one of us. We all were once the ones that people thought needed to be kept out. But luckily, God did not let the church get away with that. And he won't let us get away with it either. God's crazy grace gently prods us towards opening new doors to new people. So, in Acts, Peter was the one up here preaching the sermon, but he was also the one being prodded by God to open those doors. He was the one who was the most transformed. This is the story of God changing the rock of the church, as Peter was called. And if God can change Peter, God can change us. So how is God trying to work on us? A really beautiful example of God's Spirit rolling through the church and changing it for the better, I think, was written about in a Washington Post article given to me just this week by Walter Kolsch. It was about a church called Brookville Reformed, so very similar to Presbyterian, in Long Island, New York. And that church, after a long period of decline, losing members, they decided to open their doors, literally, and now they serve as a house of worship for Christians, for a Jewish synagogue, for a Muslim Reform prayer group, and for a special community of interfaith families, where one parent is one faith and one is another. And one participant in that last group, the interfaith families, remarked about this place, Brookville Reformed Church. They remarked, quote, "Our children are seeing this friendly, warm, loving spiritual community, which is so different from what they see on the news and in the political arena right now. It is the strongest way to battle division and stereotypes," end quote. This radical, awesome openness of the church in the article did not end up actually diluting any of the communities that were meeting there. It didn't break them down or make them weaker. Instead, it made them stronger, and it acted as a witness to the next generation. That witness to our children and our children's children is of a God who cares more about people than about rules, who cares more about humanity than about religion, whose love is big enough to say that we who were once outsiders are now invited in. In closing, I just want to share the words of a beautiful hymn, and it's actually in our hymn book, I believe number 506. It's called "Look Who Gathers at Christ's Table." Look who gathers at Christ's table. See the stories that they bring. Some are weeping, some are laughing. Some have songs they want to sing. Others ask why they're invited, burdened by the wrongs they've done. Christ insists that all are welcome. There is room for everyone. Bring your joy and bring your sadness, and prepare to be surprised by the host whose hands are wounded, who will open up your eyes. Amen.